Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's Political Commentary.
Morena, David. How are you?
Rachel. I'm very well, thank you. Rugged up with 14 layers.
Yeah, this is exactly. The first time we've had you in studio with Rachel.
Yes, it is.
We were just
enthusing over, before we came on here that we've got vast connections
in the small world that is New Zealand.
That make us feel like we've known each other a long time, even though we haven't.
Exactly.
Oh, that's great. I love that.
Well, it's great to have you up here today, David Slack. And it's also great because I'm really interested in the topic you've brought us today, or that we're talking about, which is Marilyn Waring and her biography or autobiography that's just come out, and it's fascinating because she is, we were also just saying this off mic, she's someone who is such an impressive figure in New Zealand politics that you kind of don't really think of her as a party politician, even though she was obviously a national MP, but she sort of was so singular in her own right as an MP that she kind of transcended her party in many ways.
Yeah, she sure did, and it is she right out of the gate in the book. She addresses that perception people had that said, "Weren't you in the wrong party?" And people, friends, were saying that to her when she said she was standing as a candidate.
Mm.
And how she explains it is that she looked at both parties and the rules on the caucus rules for Labour were much more stringent, and she didn't, and this is crucial, and I'll come back to it in a second, but also there was there were a couple of issues, I forget what they were now, but they really demonstrated that in many respects Labour was just as hidebound and patriarchal as the National Party, and therefore the choice was a little more straightforward for her, because what she believed in more than anything was that you would be an MP representing the electorate.
Yeah, yeah.
And as you read the book, you see that and this is the story of her 9 years, which it's taken her the best part of 40 to come around to telling, because as you can see when she recounts it was just wretched.
And so
just awful.
For anyone who isn't familiar, she was in the Muldoon era of the National Party as well, so quite a turbulent time.
And she came in as in the 1975 election, which was when he came to power. So she was there right for the whole armchair, a roller coaster nightmare ride. And the crucial point is that she said she was there for, above all, for the electorate.
Mm.
And she was true to her word. What you see then over 9 years is her taking notes in the caucus, and that's very beneficial because we have the benefit of good documentation for this account now. But it also demonstrates that in her recounting of those caucus meetings, just how much of a party machine it was in so many respects, because that is how modern politics functions. It is a party political system that is whipped, and that means that the notion that you might be an MP representing the people and being true to your position is always subsumed to the party.
Yes.
Now, a lot of people happily did that, and you see this demonstrated in some of her recounting of the caucus meetings. And I love the way she does it too, because she knows that a little will go a long way. She doesn't have to say these guys were patriarchal thugs.
Yeah.
She just has to quote a few things, and you say it yourself.
And
for example, by the time we get to 1981 and the Springbok tour, she's recounting some of the debates that are happening then, and you've got Hart, Holt, or Racist tours were engaged. In some international meetings and stating their position, which of course was contrary to the one that the National Party was sort of eggshell pursuing.
Yes.
And you had people in the caucus saying, can we have him charged with treason?
Treason?
Actually, you know, that sometimes people are given to rhetoric and to extravagant language, but this had the sound of authenticity of people who actually quite liked the idea, which what they would have been a bit habituated to after 6 years of Muldoon,
and also
of
given
the state being that
hard-headed.
Yeah.
I mean, all you need to do is watch any document from 1981 to see the thuggery that went on. And that kind of language isn't mm-hmm. that surprising in many ways as well. But it's remarkable to see it from the inside, from somebody who was in Parliament watching it happen on, I guess, like in big quotations here, on the side of the people saying that, on their party side at least.
That's
very interesting. Yeah.
But I think follow that point a little further about being singular, as she was, and she demonstrates how valuable you can be as a politician if you're there, if in your work there you're exploring policy, you're exploring evidence, you're gathering evidence, and you're testing policy rather than simply being a an agent for tripping up the opposition. She would, whichever side of the house she might have been in, you know, she would have done it the same way. She'd have been in the, she would have been, she goes out, she talks to everybody, she gets actual data, actual evidence, and she uses it for what you will not be surprised to hear, the things that mattered to her most, which were equality for women and rights for women, but and also rights for disadvantaged and minorities in many different considerations, but above all, rights for women, because what you also get from those accounts is a reminder that as much as there is a deep, deep problem today with the patriarchy, Jesus Christ, you should see what it was like 40 years ago, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Unbelievably bad.
And she was also remarkably one of the first women in Parliament in New Zealand, and also one of the youngest as well. So it's her and Chloe Swarbrick, I think, are the two youngest MPs we've ever had in New Zealand.
Yeah.
And what I find really interesting is that a lot of the stuff that Marilyn Waring has talked about as being struggles that she faced as an MP, not necessarily even just as a woman MP, but as an MP full stop, is this kind of like intense bully culture that goes on in these spaces. And that's so relevant to conversations we're having right now with all of these reports coming out recently. Like, what's your opinion on that, David? Like, what can we expect, what should we be expecting from Parliament in terms of this kind of way they conduct themselves, and what does the way they conduct themselves mean for us as like a constituent, basically?
I've worked there and I've seen the slightly unreal atmosphere that's created, but I don't think you can ever use that as a justification for ever creating a workplace anywhere where people are put in that kind of position. And in fact, if you look at the first principles of this, what Marilyn Waring did was take the proposition at face value and say, okay, you're saying Parliament is here so that I can be this advocate for the people and to explore policy. I'm going to do that. And what she was presented with was a contradiction of that. Now, that doesn't mean that the idea of Parliament should change. What it means is that the idea of Parliament should be more perfectly observed.
Yes.
and that's what has to change. We have a notion of representative democracy that is really good. And in fact, a couple of the changes that she was advocating for, as were other people like Geoffrey Palmer, then came to pass, like, for example, proportional representation, like, for instance, much more power to select committee, much like, for instance, changing the sitting hours so that it runs smoothly over the year and with breaks at school holidays.
Yeah.
rather than
really important, though, that stuff. It is really important.
Is.
Yeah.
I mean, you had, for example, the House would only convene around May and then run through to about October because that suited the farming calendar, for God's sake. now, to answer your question about the culture, what that means is that you have a whole lot of alpha types, all sharp elbowed, and that of itself means that you've got a vulnerability to things going wrong. But that doesn't mean you can't have a decent system, and what you need is a process that means anybody who is harmed by it is able to safely alert, make a complaint, do something. And that's what we got with this report. And what I think the only thing we can ask for right now is keep having these reports until things are fixed. I would say, I would just say, you mentioned Chloe Swarbrick. She probably has you'll be able to ask her for verification of this, but I would suggest that the environment she's in is not as bad as the one Marilyn Waring was in. But what she has to face that Marilyn Waring didn't is this goddamn social media culture. She approaches it with admirable fortitude and skill. I think that the only other person I've seen do it better is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, actually.
Yeah, she's also fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Jesus, yeah. But you shouldn't have to be taking that on, for God's sake. Yeah. You shouldn't.
It is. It's huge. Well, thank you very much, David, for chatting to us today about Marilyn Waring's autobiography, which sounds fascinating, and also a little bit about parliamentary culture and what we should be seeing from that, some changes we should be seeing. And we'll see you next time you come up.
You bet.
Cheers.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.